Yearning to play a few rounds of Gwent. That ought to set me straight.
Oh, I think we're gonna get it. I think we're good. I think we're gonna just go past the Rocky intro and just get right into the amazing podcast that we have right here. It's Commander Sworn 119. It is Thursday, September 5th. And I'm live here with Green Cricket, Gwent Masters Analyst, and Sir Pumpkin, Squaytel Ambassador, and frequent guest on the show. Thanks, guys, for coming by. Green Cricket in the brand new studio. How's the move going, my friend? Looking good.
Well, thanks for having me. The move is going great, a bit slow. I managed to make this room, so at least I can stream now.
Yeah.
And the rest of the house is coming along. I probably need two more days to finish it up, but it goes, and I'm happy.
Right on. And this is a premiere because you haven't been live. You just moved in and set this up today, right? So we've seen it for the first time. Pumpkin, how are you? You just came off a tidy 4-hour stream, I would imagine, 4 or 5. You were playing some Detlaff, I saw.
Yeah.
How is that going for you?
Oh, it's going good. Detlaff is pretty good. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to seeing him in Challenger. Playing some Squaretel. Sadly, kind of hard to find Squaretel matches right now. People aren't playing a lot at the high ranks right now. So we'll have to see. Hopefully that'll change in a week or so.
I think a lot of people maybe on the ladder might be surprised to hear you say that people aren't playing a lot of Squaretel, as over the last couple of days, Francesca has been lauded as one of the power decks. Would you agree that this could be a Challenger deck coming in, Pumpkin?
Yeah, Francesca definitely will see play at Challenger. I think Dana might actually see some play too. I've been experimenting with her and she's not bad. In some cases, she's a little better than Francesca, but we'll have to wait and see.
What about you, Green Cricket? Have you been practicing for a Challenger, practicing for the analyst role? Just before we get deep into like the deep Gwent shop talk, I just want to know, how long did you have to sit on that information when you got picked to be the next Gwent Masters analyst? And how stoked were you when you got that? When you got the ability to say, "Hey guys, look what I get to do."
I think it was something like 3 months. I think.
Oh yeah.
Two to three months for sure. And I was like, oh my God, when do they finally announce Gwent Challenger? Because I'm itching here. I'm itching.
Yeah, I remember. I think it's just the way things get planned out. Usually they want to make it a big announcement, but they need to also plan things in advance. I mean, for a lot of people, there needs to be like flights arranged. Of course, they need to book the hotels and get all that information, passports, etc. That all has to be done like way in advance. And I can tell you, I feel your pain. Just, it's too bad just to like sit on info that's that exciting. Because Challenger 5 is coming up. You know, the Syndicate just got fixed today. So I think that a lot of testing for a lot of people, I think, that didn't want to get out the pen and paper and do the big brain strats, is going to start today. And it's, I think Adzikoff said it best, the coin fix not implemented a week before deck submissions is a little Munka-esque.
Yeah.
What do you do when you have to test decks really fast? What do you think? You guys can just take that away.
I mean, go ahead.
No, okay, sure. Well, one, you could just not bring it. Two, it's actually kind of nerfed, right? If you think about it, because your opponent's never going to keep track. But if you keep track, they'll never know. So that it's harder to play around coins if they don't know how many coins you have. So this change is technically a nerf for the people who actually kept track of coins.
Lowering the skill ceiling once again, Gwent. I was playing this crazy list that beat me one day on the ladder. I was just playing Cyrus, where every coin you generate, you spend immediately, and it's just a swarm list that's running, that's actually running the Arena and Draga and stuff like Horsens Freak Show to get your Deathblow, the Inquisitors? The Deathblow Inquisitors spawn, and then the 4P guy that spawns, and then you're just playing Triss, Bone Talisman, Sacred Flame, Congregation.
Yeah.
It's like, it felt pretty good in a world where you just wanted to go coinless for Syndicate. I thought that was a pretty cool option.
Yeah. I mean, the funny thing is about coin tracking, because what did we do before we could look at the graveyard? What could we do before we could look at the deck? It was the same thing. You were there at paper. And also like on the challenges before, the players just make notes on paper. I think if the patch would not have hit, that would have happened again. And it's just like as before, so to say.
Yeah, I mean, but in general, though, I also wanted to talk about kind of the question, like, what do you do when you need to test really fast? So let's say Syndicate came out let's say somebody developed a new deck that, I mean, Syndicate didn't change that much. That's the thing. So I don't think it's going to surprise us too much. But let's say that this is like a, maybe a sleeping horse in Junior Strat, just to use something arbitrary, that kind of rose to fame maybe like just a couple of days or maybe even just like 24 hours before deck submissions. And it all of a sudden seemed like, man, we need to tech about this. How would you test a deck? How would you test matchups as fast as you possibly can? I think that obviously having people available for scrims, but to really kind of tech against that stuff, like, I guess, how would you do it, guys? How would you do it?
I think like calling for reinforcements is like the only thing you can do at this point. Like, get people in there, like try like the different matchups you want to play, what you want to try, let them try. And I think at some point it comes down to like how dangerous can it be versus how safe are you with your lineup already? Because if the deck potential is like really great and like it feels like them one deck that can rule them all, then maybe you should consider it. But like if it's not at that on that level, and you already practiced like 2 weeks for a different lineup, then maybe you should just, I think, just look at it, but don't touch it too much and just see what's going there. So if it appears in the tournament, you can play against it. But I think safety is more interesting or better in this case.
Is it crazy to think that some people were maybe testing two versions of a deck, maybe something that might have like a soft tech or a tech that might be able to quickly get swapped in if something were to come up, like Bounty showing up and actually performing? I mean, it's hard to say. I played 15 games today. I said this in your chat, Pumpkin. 15 or 16 games today, no Syndicate. Didn't even see it. Didn't even have to tech against it. It's not like everybody who was waiting to play Syndicate. At least at, I'm almost at pro rank, but I'm not quite there yet. So everybody kind of between 5 and 1. I get matched, I think, between like 5 and 2, I think, for any given match. But there was no Syndicate at all. And you said, Pumpkin, you saw one Gudrun, like a single Gudrun.
I saw one Gudrun today and then two DJs last night when I was playing off stream.
Right.
But here's the thing. How do you necessarily tech against it, right? So you can run Purify for Bounty. Not all decks have access to that Purify because you're not going to be running the neutral, what is it?
Peller?
Yeah, Peller. Like, Peller. You're probably not going to throw that in. Dryad's Crest is actually okay in Squirtle. It's quite strong against Bounty. SK now has Gremis. I think Gremis is going to be a card. If you bring SK, I think you're going to want to be playing Gremis.
I love Gremis.
It's going to do well against Bounty, Poison, and Bleed.
And running Muzzle, too. You can unlock stuff that you muzzle if you have the extra charge from a Freya or something like that. There's a lot of cool stuff.
Do you want to run Muzzle right now?
Why not? Why would you not? I mean, I don't run Muzzle in every deck, but
it's expensive.
It is. So is Portal. That seems to be around.
It's probably just one of the best cards still.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a hard time saying no to Muzzle when I have the room.
Yeah, exactly.
No, talk me out of it, Pumpkin. Talk me out of it. Talk us out of it.
Okay, so against Syndicate, what are you muzzling? You're muzzling the boat? You want to muzzle that boat? It's a 3 now. Against Muzzle, it got buffed technically. It's a lower swing. It's a 6-point swing. You're better off just running Regis. There's not enough full tests where stealing a commando is good enough. What else are you muzzling? If your opponent plays a Marauder, you can muzzle the Marauder for a 12-point muzzle. That's good, sure. So against Squirtle, that's pretty good. It's good against SK because of Priest, sure. And that's about it, right? What else is it good against?
Well, I think it's good against enough, and I think that the point swing justifies, plus you're removing an engine as well. So you get usually an engine removal and 10-point swing. I just feel like it doesn't have to be like the bet. Like, it is a good card. It just, I don't think it has to be much better for its provision cost. I think it does quite a lot. I just think it's worth it. Again, I don't run it in every deck, but I've been playing a lot of Ardal at the moment.
Okay, so like in Nilfgaard, I think it's fine because you have the Menno tutor, right? But like in decks that don't have the tutor, what if you don't draw it until like round 3 when it's too late?
It can be too late. It's true, especially if people are playing around it. But I don't know. It depends if you have changes or damage. It really depends on the deck, I guess.
Yeah, I was like, if you don't draw it, argument, like, you can do it about most cards. So I don't know. Like, I think Muzzle is kind of like your safe option to, like, if the enemy does something spooky and like there is something potentially which can go out of hand, that's worth Muzzle for. And just to have that as an option is like often, I don't know, I feel very good.
Okay. Well, that's why I run Heatwave now. Heatwave is in like so many decks. I love the card. It's so powerful. It's really good against Hyper Thin. It's really good against Crazy Engines, good against Summoning Circle.
Summoning Circle especially, I think, is maybe the best reason to... If Summoning Circle is around, I think that the risk of including it is usually fine. I mean, like, I think that in most cases, I think I'd rather have Geralt in, like, just to yep. have the body, plus you're removing it anyway. But there are some mm-hmm. things that Heat Wave, some jams that Heat Wave can get you out of, and you're kind of just paying the cost, like, okay, it's not as expensive.
I think the flexibility is worth it.
You know which card is really good? Yennefer Invocation.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't
Heat Wave for cheaper.
Yeah, it's Heat Wave even for cheaper. And if you're Calvet, you have even more flexibility.
Go again. Yeah.
Which is awesome.
This is my favorite deck of the new patch, honestly. Like, you can do so many cool stuff with Calvet. Yeah. You just play the enemy against him again. It feels like, I don't know why, but it feels a bit like beta to me. Like, if Finn to Syria, you know, you can do this Nilfgaardian things. Like, it's really great. Like,
I think it's probably one of the better Nilfgaard cards that's been added. Nilfgaard Hyper Thin Mirror matchups are a lot of fun with that card.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They're the crazy Nilfgaard Hyper Thin matchups with Invocation are always so much fun because you got to outsmart your opponent and play around their cards too.
Especially if they bless you with something like, in a mirror, you could always Diplomacy a Viper Witcher and just kind of it's over.
Yep.
But
yep.
if they play a Viper Witcher, you can remedy one as well. So.
Mm-hmm. It's I started running Cynthia too for Cynthia. The mirrors.
It's a bit of a Mexican standoff, you know, like who plays Willigan Forts first?
Mm-hmm.
See, I've been playing mostly Ardal when it comes to Nilfgaard. It's just, I feel like it's kind of more my, like, I'm more of a control player, I think, if I have a choice, which mm-hmm. isn't so much, which is definitely a choice in Nilfgaard. But the way they do kind of like every matchup is different if you're running like Diplomacy and Experimental Remedy, Bribery, Sweers in some situations, and of course Ardal himself, you can find yourself building, like, it's like you're playing your opponent's deck, but not quite like that. But it definitely feels like old Slave Driver, kind of like where you're just kind of getting a little bit of extra value from everything you're doing with their faction or their deck, and then you're getting the extra charges on the, like, Fire Scorpions or Helga to kind of give you that extra tempo, even though you're just playing one of their cards. And Skellige, mm-hmm. you can just build all their combos, build the protectors against them. It just feels super fresh all the time. But Ardal kind of, like, you know, he's sort of like still the bad guy, I think, maybe from the last season where he was arguably, you know, we know the meme, the fourth most played leader was DJ. We're pretty sure Ardal was one of the three above DJ, I think. Why would you pick Calvet over Ardal, Green Cricket?
Invocation,
yeah. Is that's the sole reason?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, no yeah. doubt it's a cool card, and no doubt you can make... You don't feel it's too vulnerable? You don't feel like there's too many things, like there's resets in the meta, there's opponent deck thinning and like Tibor. I like running Tibor just as is. No gimmicks. Play it. Yeah. Play it on red coin. Sometimes rip a huge combo out of the deck. Just playing it alone for the point swing and just pulling that one extra card sometimes feels just so satisfying.
Playing Ardal and Calvet are like two different playstyles, kind of, like, because when you do Calvet, you have the option to like hyper thin like even more. For example, like, do you go -1? Do you go to Siri? Do you go to like 1 maybe with Invocation? Like, where do you stop with your thinning depending on what end plays? And I'm not at pro rank as well. I'm currently also like rank 4. I'm trying to get there.
Same, halfway.
yeah.
That Gaunt
like, you have to play a lot of matches to catch up. So anyway, like, and I don't know, like, in the matches I have played so far, I have a feeling that with the choices you can make free of thinning, like, it kind of felt more flexible to me, and I could more react to my opponent instead of going Ardal. I don't know. I think the flexibility of Calvet is worth more, but it also depends on, like, the meta, of course, because, like, if there's more, like, really, like, a lot of engine stack there, I probably would rather go with Ardal just to have, like, this one extra grab, for example.
Yeah, for sure.
I definitely agree. If there's a lot of engines in the meta, I think Ardal is probably better. But we're not really at that point right now, just because Francesca's kind of better than Northern Realms at the moment, and Point Slam is pretty popular with Hyper Thin Nilfgaard. So if you're going to be playing a engine deck, you really need to be playing a greedy list, and Northern Realms doesn't really do that right now. Most Northern Realms lists that I've seen have been full tests.
Full tests is still good. Meave is very good still, I think. I've actually seen mostly Meev lists, but again, rank four, just like, I mean, it really is different, I suppose, what's going on in pro rank. I know that it's really like night and day. I think that as far as like what, especially when it comes to when it, Challenger, which we'll talk about in a moment, we'll talk about maybe some predictions as to what people might actually bring. Because the tournament landscape is also very different from the ladder landscape. Definitely.
Yeah.
But I think that, Point Slam is definitely around. Svalblood, big Detlaff as well. And Nilfgaard Hyperthin really wants to put, and some Kalantha builds. I don't know how popular they are in your gameplay, but I know that sometimes you might find Kalantha wanting to bleed if they ever get in control of the round, that kind of stuff. Open question to both of you here, because some people in my chat have told me that this feels like it's a bleed meta. It feels like it's maybe a push round two sometimes meta. What would you say to that, agree or disagree, and why does it feel like that? Because I feel like before, pushing never felt, especially round two, pushing never felt correct. You would always want to have the extra card or the extra turn because usually you're building a stronger combo than your opponent. What do you guys think? Pumpkin, what do you think?
It's definitely a bleed meta. In most decks, I go for 2-0s or I push very aggressively in round two and then go to round three. The reason being is there's a lot of combo-oriented decks, as you mentioned. Hyperthin would be one of them. And if you can bleed out one of their high-tempo plays like Yanner's or Theseus, that's huge. Mm. Also, a lot of them play greedy thinning, like Portal. So sometimes they'll brick on a card, and it can end up costing them the game. Bleeding is almost always correct, unless, of course, you are playing a really long favored round, which, what decks do that right now? Meev?
Long favored? Francesca's not bad, I guess, in some situations. Meev,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, Francesca's not bad.
I feel like long... what was I playing? Oh, now I can't remember. I think the Swarmy Cyrus build actually has a, which probably doesn't need to run insanity cards anymore, but I think that that deck can be pretty crazy if you give it enough turns.
For sure.
You get extra bone talismans.
If I queue into Hemelfart, I'm bleeding in round two.
Talismans are just like kind of nutty. Like I've played those things like very consistently for 14 plus points. I think that that's, with Triss Telekinesis, that we could talk about this. Triss Telekinesis back in the meta for this sweet window of time where Syndicate doesn't seem to be popular. If Syndicate kind of comes back into the meta, something comes tier one or something becomes really popular, is this rip Triss? Would we never put Triss in? Pumpkin Shaken, is it? Well, Green Cricket, have you been playing Triss in your matchups lately? Have you been enjoying having this card back in the game?
Triss is just better because the spells are just better, so to say.
Yeah.
And with with Syndicate not in the meta, you don't risk going for it as like 3-point cards if you don't use the coins. So that's the thing. In Nilfgaard, however, like if there is a chance, for example, if you play Adel again, or if you play Yennefer Invocation, like even there, there's Triss, you can make some use of the coins as well. You probably won't get that much value of it. But I have the feeling that if there is a lot of, let's say, Crimes DJ or Crimes, whatever, like Campfire back in the meta, and it's like you queue into it a lot, then probably Triss will suffer. But on the other hand, like you get free cards. Like question is, what's the chance for getting like the spell you prepare in your deck as a like main target, so to say? I don't know. I feel like if a queue would change some things up.
I think we missed that last sentence, Green Cricket. One more time. Hit that one more time.
I say like if Syndicate is like really popular. And like every second match is, for example, Syndicate, then I probably would get rid of Triss. But then on the other hand, I also would probably tech a bit more against Syndicate. So
yeah, exactly. I mean, that's an interesting point. Yeah, if Syndicate is going to be that prevalent, I guess you're taking greater measures than maybe just not worrying about a bricked, 11 provisions at this point? I mean, I just felt like, you know, they just had to just give Triss just a couple more buffs, a little bit here, a little bit there. I think people want to play that card. It's just, I feel like maybe it's just me. I could be biased, but it's just such a beloved card. It's like one of the cards that got create right. Nobody really complains about that card. It's one of the cards that can have like really exciting tournament outcomes if you can't hit the thing you need, or if you can make great use out of the options that were given to you when it's not that thing. I think one of the best, I mean, I remember Wild Hunt too. A whole game came down to somebody putting Mardrome in a deck that normally didn't run it. Triss came down to get the easy, you know, answer, the easy, like, what was it, the game-winning bronze. And this Mardrome showed up where that card should have been, lost the game. It just a lot of great moments as well. So I'm happy that it's back. And like, what do you guys think about the syndicate cards in general, how they're so specialized? I feel like this is just like a pretty random question that I'm asking. I want this to be an organic conversation, but is it bad that syndicate specials are so like specialized for their faction, or is that exactly what you want out of a kind of a faction identity special? This is an open one.
I think it's fine for Syndicate, because Syndicate has such a deliberate faction identity. It's all about like these coins. It's all about like, if there's one faction who does that, I think it's fine. Like if you start to create like faction over faction, and every faction is very unique and can only use cards that only this faction can use, then suddenly Gwent will be very, very strange to play. But if it's just like very isolated, I think it's totally fine to have that. And the good thing about the Syndicate specials is still they have a secondary effect. It's not only like coins, except if you get Swindle, of course, and stuff like that. Most of them have a secondary effect, which you can still use if you steal them, whatever. So I think it's totally okay for Syndicate, especially since they tried something new. Like, I really like the boldness of Syndicate when they introduced it. So I think it's good that they did it. I think it's good that it stays like that way. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure if it's a good idea to like keep doing that, so to say.
I'm excited just to play for the next couple of days as Syndicate probably creeps back into the meta just over time, because I feel like Syndicate was very like overtuned, strangely tuned, and then a meta, the DJ full test Ardal meta that everybody wanted to comment on. As I didn't really mind that meta too much, but I think that, you know, Syndicate has been so present. And there have been such sharp balancing, especially around the power level of Northern Realms in the last patch, that I feel like Syndicate has had not a lot of chance to exist in a six-faction world where all six factions have something to really offer mm-hmm. and threaten with, especially in this meta where Detlaf is showing up. Erica's Queen has some options, I think, that are being explored right now. I think those are the only two real options at the moment. But I think that, especially with Skellige, I always believe in Croc, and Svalblitz seems decent, and I haven't experimented with Est, but if there's a combo in there that's threatening, then it's probably going to be out there, because usually single turn leaders tend to show up if they've got that killer combo. But I mean, the meta seems really diverse. Pumpkin, would you say that? Would you say that this patch, despite the Syndicate bug kind of disqualifying Syndicate, would you say that this meta has been far more diverse than the last one, or in a healthy state? Like, how would you describe it?
I mean, I don't think there's any comparison. Last patch, there was Usurper, Ardal, DJ, Voltes. That's it. Those are the four leaders on the ladder.
Yeah.
At the moment, we have every faction is playable. Every faction has a tier one or two deck. On top of that, they're all fun. Monsters, yes. In the past, I haven't been a huge fan of them. It's been like thrive, 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 big, big, big. That's it. That's your that's your round. With the vampires, well, they're good now, and they're fun to play. The vampires are really, really fun to play. Definitely the most fun I've had with monsters since Homecoming. So they really nailed that one. So yeah, the meta is much better. Everything is viable. We've been kind of laughing at Syndicate being terrible, but they're not actually terrible. I mean, they're popping up, and they can put points on the board. They're just not going crazy with bounty. So I think they're a little bit more balanced, obviously. I don't know what kind of tier list they are. They're probably a strong tier two. Maybe tier one, but obviously there needs to be more testing, and I need to play against more of them, because I've only played against like four of them total now.
Yeah. I mean, can we search our memory before DJ came out? Like, Syndicate was around before Dijkstra was out. There were a lot of decks, like Gudrun was out there. Horsen was out there as well. This is, of course, in a world where bounty is different, and, you know, the world is different. Yeah. So, I mean, even Cyrus Crimes, which was probably the least affected by all of the changes to Syndicate, I feel like Cyrus is probably a chance to have some sort of deck that's fairly playable. It has a pretty good amount of bronze options. I really do believe in this Arena and Draga kind of extra reach ping sort of Skellige style with the longship type of just having extra reach on the board, extra pings and extra control over kind of what gets to live and what gets bountied. No, go ahead.
My issue with Hemelfart is it's not good against Bleed. If you get bled, you're going to be at a bigger disadvantage than any other Syndicate deck that gets bled. Am I wrong?
You are not wrong. Well, Green Cricket, you respond to that. I gotta respond.
No, I just wanted to say, like, if you play Swarm, like, that's what you're up to. Like, you just can't get bled in round two, except
when round one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what you need to do, right?
I mean, that is, it seems like it's the kind of deck that, because you have potentially, especially now, and especially because you are playing Syndicate, you have access to up to 3 Bone Talismans with Triss Talisman, might as well be, Triss Telekinesis. You have like, you have a really devastating long round if it gets to the point where you filled your board and you're able to play these 15, 16 point talismans, yeah. So you can get control of round one. I felt like Full Test, when you could like trigger Aquavist with Full Test, you would get into these positions where it's like, well, I'm not losing this round, so let's go. I feel like Cyrus can get into that position as well. But I think that you're going to get bled. For me, it's like, can I survive this bleed or not? Can I commit Sacred Flame? Okay, I committed Sacred Flame. Do I need Sacred Flame to win round 3? Because I think if Sacred Flame's out, it's hard to bleed Himmelfarb for the same reason I said it's hard to lose or hard to win round 1 against him if he gets, you know, enough stuff on the board.
Sure, but like then you lose one of your wincons, and mm-hmm. the problem is like I feel like Bone Talisman in a way is a win more card, you know? Like it really puts points on the board, but if you play 3 of them, like it's you just go higher and higher at the point where you probably would already have like won, but like in a short round, like it's just like it won't give you the points you need.
I would just disagree by saying it doesn't seem like win more because you're usually building a board that's hard to control because your opponent isn't getting value removing your little tokens. And because they're not removing your little tokens, unless they're running Lacerate, sure. Fran meta, you're probably going to do that. But, you know, that is the big thing. But if there's no reason to really kind of like ping off these little worthless units, you're going to get that value and it's not going to be win more. It's actually going to get you back into the round. I mean, that's just my experience with it. I didn't play a ton of games with it, but I think it has potential personally. What do you think?
I don't know, like, to be honest, I didn't play too much with this. So.
Yeah. I mean, there's lots still coming out.
As soon as DJ entered the syndicate, I was like, okay, bye, Himmelfarb. Thank you for being there. So.
It's too bad, right? DJ's power level and his passive just he just really
stomped on everybody.
Yeah, the faction is kind of like, why would I play these other things? But I mean, there's a lot of flavor there. Do you think, Pumpkin, do you think that the change to Cleaver makes that much of a difference? Do you think that really ups his playability? Or do you think that, you know, he's dead. Just going to probably be just dead? That's the word.
Well, okay, so we're talking about Cleaver and Syndicate the leader, right? Not like old Cleaver, who's now like, what's the new name?
Carlo Varese.
Carlo, yes, thank you.
I'm talking about,
he's dead because, well, A, there's only one good high provision syndicate card, and that's Justice, and you can just play that with Furko. So, like, the consistency is already there. We don't need it. The only Cleaver deck that was playable was Shoop Cleaver, and they killed it because you can't play Shoop anymore, or Muzzle, or... Yeah, so it's dead. It's just straight dead unless there's some crazy... I guess you can play double... what's it, Fist Tech or something? That's like the double poison, you can kill a unit. Like, that's kind of cute, but like, do you really want to do that? Probably not. So it could be playable in the future if CDPR introduces some more high provision syndicate cards. But until then, I think Cleaver's unplayable.
Unplayable, yeah.
Unplayable.
I mean, speaking of unplayable, a leader that I thought could have used a little love in 3.2, Gurnakura, I think could have used a point or two. I feel like she's a little left behind. Do you think that would really make her crazy if she was 13 provisions in a world where Fran is 15? That's an open question. Whoever wants to grab that one.
I was playing Gurnakura last patch before the Vampire. In my opinion, it was the only playable deck. I played Gurnakura Shoop. I did fine with it.
I agree. I played that exact same deck, I think. I love that deck. Thanks for making it.
Yeah, it was last month, it was the only playable monster deck, in my opinion. It's the only thing that even stood a chance against other decks. So if I would say other monster leaders should get buffed before Gurnakura. I think Gurnakura is still playable right now. You can still play Gurney Shoop. It's just like, why would you want to play that when you can play Vampires? Vampires are cooler. And you get to play Vampires. Gurney isn't really a new leader where Detlef is. So.
What about Argus Queen, though?
What about who?
Argus Queen?
Argus Queen.
Yeah, Argus Queen's still good. The problem with Argus Queen I see is in a long round, she's great. If left left uncontested, she just wins the game. You can go like 150, 200 points. The issue is, once again, if you get bled, pretty bad.
I think there are a lot of different Argus builds out there. Like, I've been playing Argus over the last week before I moved, so like 3 days ago. And I was climbing, this was my main deck to climb, and it was a deck which didn't include like this typical like Argus worm elements, but actually focused on like a lot of consumes, actually support, you know, to get some Ren Warriors and stuff. And with that, I was like, if someone tries to bleed you, you know, you drop Current Fear into Detlev into Kieran and so on. And like you put just so much value on the board that it's hard to beat you. And then in the last round, you can still play a decent, you don't need the full round for Glastonbury. You can play a very short Glastonbury round with some extra stare, especially, for example, if you can pull a Summoning Circle Vran, for example, again.
So, oh, the old classic, the old classic machine gun. Summoning Circle Vran, rat-a-tat-tat.
Yeah.
So if you're playing Summoning Circle, once again, you're prone to bleed, but you mentioned like K-Ran or the other consumer.
Oh, six. Wait. Give me a second here. Summoning Circle is like even good if you can play it at four. Like if you have only four turns.
I'm fully aware, but my point is, let's say you have that in round two and I'm bleeding you. Yeah. You got this zero point card that you can never play, and you never play, never play, never play, and then you play zero and you lose the game. And the Detlef plus K-Ran is really, really good, but it's very draw dependent. A lot of the times they'll have one or the other. Also, it's a two card combo. So they play the K-Ran, I pass. They play the Detlef, I pass, right? I bleed until I get out the circle or the Detlef or K-Ran, and then I get out, right? So like that giant power swing play that you have is a two card combo in which I can pass on one of them. So I'm still not convinced. I don't like decks that are really prone to bleeding, which is why I don't think Hemelfart's a good leader. Every time I queue into Hemelfart, I just win round one and then smash him in round two and the game's over. I don't know. I'm just not convinced.
That's why I love having you on the stream, Pumpkin. You log so many games. You've seen so many matchups. You test a lot of stuff as well. And not just Squirtle stuff, even though you're the Squirtle faction ambassador. But you do log a ton of games as well. And Green Cricket, you just moved, right? you probably had to cram as many games. You know, it's funny. I was going to talk to, I wanted to actually have the analyst team on at one point. Shinmiri is in China as well. And I was going to ask you guys, kind of like, both of you were just, didn't Shinmiri just move now? Or he's traveling. You just moved. Somebody else I was talking to has just moved as well. It's obviously right before Challenger is the best time for this to happen.
It's crazy.
End of the month patches and end of the month things that occur. You know, moves can really.
So basically, what I'm doing here is like we have like this team or two's like preparation, of course, and I'm just like following all the Discord channels, like trying to soak all the infos in while packing boxes, so to say. I'm trying to get games in when I can, and. That's it. Now, like when I'm finally done, I'm going to cram so many games into like I can't. But one thing though, like this.
How many days left? We're leaving soon, eh?
I know. The good thing is like my wife really is helping me because we are creating like this overview sheet about like all the people who attend there, about popular deck list, and she's actually gathering all the stuff for me so we can go for it together. So like I'm not doing this alone. I have help. That's
right. Yeah.
So, shout out to my wife.
Yeah, you know what? Say, support's a big thing sometimes. You know, you just kind of gotta, you know, I gotta play these video games. Help me. You know, I never thought a sentence like that. You know, I'm obviously paraphrasing that kind of thing, but you know, when you need help with work, it ends up just kind of sounding like that sometimes. So shout out to all the spouses that can listen to that and put up with it. So Challenger is coming up. We're talking about traveling to Challenger. Teams are getting ready. Obviously, players are getting ready. We're going to see old favorites like, everybody, really. It's been since March since we've actually had a formal event, and it's been over a year since we've had a Challenger-level event that is kind of a celebration of the best players over the season or seasons, but it's been like real literal seasons. It's been real 3 months. Three most seasons. So, you know, DeMarcus is coming back. We're going to see Freddy Babes there, Wang It as well as one of the other open winners as well. And, you know, a bunch of the top crown point winners. You know, if you follow Gwent Masters on Twitter, and you should, you're probably already getting ready to get updates about all these players as well. So when it comes to the tournament, when it comes to maybe building a list, Pumpkin, first of all, do you ever participate in any tournaments? Or are you just down to just like streaming ladder all the time?
I just stream ladder. Streaming tournaments is not ideal because you have to put a delay on. I hate streaming delay. It's just not fun. You can't interact with chat.
Yeah.
And the times of the tournaments are sometimes like 8 a.m. and waking up at like, that's just not happening. I don't know. People have asked. Maybe I'll participate at some point. We'll see. But I'm pretty happy with just playing on ladder.
Have you played in a qualifier for Challenger or for Open?
No.
You've never even, you've never even tried it. No, you should try it.
No.
I think that you would, I think everybody who follows you would love to see, you play so much. Like, I think that, you know, you just gotta, like, because we're gonna talk about tournament lineups, so let's just kind of like kind of extend this conversation, and let's extend this conversation to like what you would bring to a lineup if you had to prepare for this tournament right now. Since Pumpkin, you have nothing at stake here, you're not going to be in the tournament, you could honestly be very, very critical about what you think would be techable against, what would be, well, vulnerable, let's say vulnerable in general, or what could maybe play against what other people might be teching against. Do you think that there is like a killer lineup that you could focus on? This is obviously like a in-depth question, so we can even start with what would be your first top two decks that you'd bring, no argument. I'll throw that to you, Pumpkin, and then Green Cricket, I'd like to hear what your choice would be as well.
Well, I'm definitely bringing Danish Squirtle with, yeah, Poison, because it's good. Yeah. I don't think people realize that she's very strong in round two, and typically when people bleed Dana in round two, they lose a card every time.
Because the poison.
Yeah, it's just insane. Dana is so, so good. The consistency is really, really nice. Like, Francesca's better if you draw perfectly. And I'm not very good at that, so I like banking on the Dana to kind of fish me out of that, and it's really nice. As far as the second deck I'd bring, I'm curious if people are going to hard tech against Kalveet. Maybe some kind of like Kalveet hyper thin deck, but that doesn't rely on the giant package at the end with all the boosting, mm-hmm. Just because I think people are going to be bringing in like disruption tools slash tall removal. Tall removal is just good. If you throw Heat Wave into your deck, you're good against SK, you're good against Nilfgaard, you're good against Monsters, you're good against Syndicate because they play, what's the four that goes really tall?
Sea Jackal?
Yeah, Sea Jackal. Sea Jackal goes like 12 to 20 or something.
I wouldn't recommend, so I would recommend against playing that card personally, but for that exact
most
reason.
Most people play it though.
I mean, do they? I mean, it's fine if they are.
They need point spenders. They need bronze point spenders. Oh, and they can like no longer rely on bounty, executioner wipe. So they do need those point spenders. Mm-hmm. So some people are playing Blacksmith.
What was that?
You can play Blacksmith and try to distribute the points.
Sure. But we're in kind of a semi-control oriented meta, so sometimes it's going to be a little hard to work with that. Also, if you kill the Blacksmith, you kind of lose the value. But yeah, you can definitely play Blacksmith. As far as the second deck I would bring, I don't know. I haven't played a lot of Northern Realms. Foltest still seems strong.
I think he is. I think Meev is right there, though. No?
Why would you play Meev when you can have a 20-point finisher in round three with Foltest?
I think Meev puts enough stuff out of reach, fights well against Skellige in a tournament meta, but I mean in general. Just being able to have that extra reach, I think, is pretty reasonable. I think that there's a lot of good cards out there like Reynard and Anna and the Drummers, obviously, and being able to get something to six that would otherwise be killed by even like the most premium of removal is decent. I played a charge based version last meta and I liked it, but these days I think there's more of a mid range version that's just like superior to it, that's maybe less weak against Ardal, I suppose. That's the worst matchup for that list. That's the problem with Meave. I think Ardal is pretty hard to beat, and Ardal is fairly popular. Like, for me, the two lists that I'd pick first would be, I think, Ardal and probably Francesca, but that just could just be like the way, like, just because I've had experience with those decks. Green Cricket, I want to hear what your two picks would be, but then I also want to ask Pumpkin about Francesca versus Dana, if we could even talk about that. But go ahead.
That's an interesting question, because I would probably pick Francesca right away, because I just feel like this is probably one of the strongest decks right now. And I think with Ada, I was thinking about Northern Realms, like what if we want to bring there. And I think the two really viable leaders are Foltest and Meave. So the question is, what can you do with Meave what you can't do with Foltest and vice versa? And I think Foltest is again, I think, a bit of the safer option, because like there's a lot of ways you can play against Meave if like you disrupt her, like you bleed, of course, for example. That's some stuff that can really hurt Meave, where Foltest has some tools to, against it. So I probably would go for Foltest first. Mm-hmm. But I also think like Ada is probably like the deck I'd like to choose in like Francesca.
In a bleed meta, he just seems so brutal. Yes. Like, if you get away with not playing, like, X card, and you have Ardal at your disposal in round two, especially if you know you're playing somebody who has to set up, you just take it. you just take it and then you use your extra card to like muzzle the other thing. You can play treason and kill two engines in some situations, like Northern Realms, they have to set up, and you can just clap two things at once, which is always pretty good. Squaytel usually does that too because they row stack, but I mean, a lot of people are playing Portal and Summoning Circle and like actually really playing around treason right now. It's actually, I find treason is the hardest card to get value from lately. I'm thinking I want to run like something else, like I don't know, like decoy or anything else. I don't know, but it's really good when it works. Why are you saying that? I was just saying the other tactic that's at seven, but
yeah, but I don't know if you want to play decoy.
No, I don't. I'm not serious. I'm just saying like the only tactic at seven you could replace it with.
I think Ada is even better, by the way, like because we play with open deck lists, at least like in day two. So like this is where exactly knowing what comes against you, like what you what is the nerf you need to hit so the enemy just like is disrupted.
For sure.
I think Ardal is definitely a safe pick just because it's harder to tech against Ardal, right? Yeah. Like there's not much you can do. They're kind of counter your strategy, and as you mentioned before, McBeer, they kind of like steal your opponent's deck and disrupt it. That's kind of the entire purpose of Ardal. Whereas like Kalvite or like a hyper thin Kalvite deck, if you're playing a lot of tall removal or some kind of disruption like Cynthia or Viper Witch or something like that, you're gonna lose. Good players against hyper thin players are gonna beat them if they have that tech.
It feels like a trap a bit. Like,
I don't think, I don't know if Kalvite makes it. I don't know. Like it just unless it's like some sort of like, you guys know how Demorcus and Andy approached Challenger 4 last year. The idea was they brought three they called it the Triangle of Greed. Yeah, Green Cricket, you know all about this. They brought like three specific things that like no player would bring the tech for all of those things. So there was just a way that they did it, right? Demorcus won, and Andy got through as well with the exact same lineup. That Siri Olaf, like, you had to have Scorch to beat it, but if you had Scorch to beat it... There was one different card in that list. I mean, we won't get too buried in the past here. It's so funny. I saw something on Reddit, I think, like, or on Twitter. It was like, last year at Challenger, this game, and I looked at the screenshot, I'm like, what game was this? Like, I'm so unfamiliar with the game that was played a year ago. Which is why I'm so excited to get back into actually like looking at these matchups specifically, because March was a long time ago as far as like me being a caster, Green Cricket, you being an analyst as well, or I guess even thinking about analyzing matchups, just a totally different world out there. So
yeah, it was long before, like this was a long time ago.
Yeah, we saw the preview for Homecoming around this time last year. Well, this the Challenger time last year. So do you think, I mean, now a year later, we've seen a lot of stuff. We've seen the Mulligan change, the main thing, Thronebreaker, kind of like big patch. Then, of course, the Crimson Curse expansion, Nilfgaard rework, Novigrad expansion, Northern Realms rework, and then ultimately the pro season, you might say the pro rebalancing. How do we feel about a year of Gwent with this many changes? It's been exciting, no doubt, but I don't know for like... For some good reasons and for some bad reasons, I think. It's been pretty wild. To have two expansions in between tournaments is already pretty wild in the first place. But as the game continues to change, do you think that the game's constant changing is to the detriment or the benefit? Let's say on a more smaller scale of reworks and less of a larger scale of fundamental changes, like the Mulligan change. But for small scale, like these end of month big changes, do we like these? Do we like the idea that we have to kind of unlearn what we know and relearn and readapt? Or do we think that it's exhausting? I guess those are the two points, I feel like. The exhausting part and the I'm so excited by all the possibilities every month part. I'll throw it to you, Green Cricket, first, and then to Pumpkin. That's the question.
I mean, we had both worlds, right? Like, we had the content where nothing changed, basically, and now we have the totally different world where we have changes every month. And I think it needs to be the end of the month changes. It just feels so much more alive. There's so much more you can do. I think the game needs it to just like evolve and just to give people something to discuss, to try out new decks, to find something. Because like in the content trial at the beginning, actually new decks came up because the meta changed on itself. But like after 2 months or something, everything just became stale. And that's something that never should happen in a game, I think. So like the end of month changes, I'm really digging them. And I think it's vital that we keep them.
What about you, Pumpkin? Do you feel like, well, I guess it's the same question posed right back to you.
I really like end of month challenge, end of month changes. As a streamer, it's really nice just because tier one potentially oppressive decks do get balanced out, and there's new decks to try, which is always fun. As far as like the reworks, I'm enjoying them because as far like, yeah, you could say that people have to like relearn the cards or whatever, but the way I see it, the cards that they're changing are cards that we're seeing zero play. It's not like they're taking really important cards that are seeing a lot of play and they're just like completely reworking. It's not like, I don't know, let's pick a card. Sarit is now unplayable. No, I'm kidding. Or it kind of is.
Well, Chad would agree, Sarit, I think.
Yeah, Pepe hands for Sarit.
It's just the combo is just, it's not so much the top end, it was the bottom end. The fact that, you know, it could have been, the fact that he loses the three when he's not activated, I guess, felt like the worst part for sure. Yeah, Pepe hands.
It can't even do three damage anymore. It's terrible.
That's what I'm saying.
You can't even kill an engine.
That's specifically what I'm saying. The fact that he...
the five damage was important too, because there were a lot of fives. Like, it can't do anything. It just sucks.
Yeah, it's not only Sarit. Like, they nerfed Orcs with him too. So, I think the Witches weren't that good before as well, to be honest. But now, they're like just... You play them... the provisions of the card is higher than power. I don't know. It doesn't work out for me.
Would you play it if it was deal 2 damage or deal 5 damage?
I mean, 5 damage is like really, really good, so yeah. Probably yes. Yeah.
I never like the Witchers just because I hate draw dependent cards. I hate them so much because I never draw them.
You know, it's, you play it, like, yeah, on a large enough scale.
Yeah, like even Squirtle, Ithlin Skaggs, like it's a great combo. Agitators on Skaggs, fantastic. If you draw them, draw them round 3, they're complete garbage. I've actually started running Skaggs again, not because it's better, but because Call of the Forest makes it not a completely garbage card. It's a 5/5, remove a unit. It's quite good. But it's just draw-oriented card. Like the triple Witcher package, I was never a fan of because I would always draw like Letho and Ox, and it's just like, wow, these cards suck.
But this is the thing, right? It's about options. And like with Call of the Forest, you have more to play Sheldon. With the free Witcher packets, you had the option to play Selkirk and Leffe for Selkirk and Orcs. So it's less draw dependent and you can play them in different ways. And for example, in meta where a lock on Orcs is really good as well, you can also just play Witcher package because the card alone is good. So I think draw dependent cards are really cool. As in my opinion, I really like them as long as I have different options to use them.
True. I mean, I think that the Ox and Sarit package is interesting in like a Fran meta, but that means that your Sarit is just like unacceptably bad when you play him. Finally, it's just, I mean, it's just, what is he? 7 points for 8 if you play him without Ox. And if you played Ox and locked the 2 fledglings, does it even really, I mean, you could have just killed the other fledgling. I don't know. Like, it just doesn't seem like the trade-off is quite fair. I think that Letho being in the mix is interesting. I liked when they added that card, they changed Letho to be part of that combo. And I like that idea. I like the idea. Sorry, I'm losing my voice. I like the idea of having hand-based interaction with Nilfgaard specifically because they have ways of like fixing hand specifically, like drawing extra cards throughout the deck, putting things in the bottom, Emir picking stuff up. Like, I think that idea is all good. It's just they kind of hurt that. They kind of made it less rewarding to do that. And the provision buff was not enough for Sarit specifically. Pumpkin, I just wanted to get back to Dana versus Fran because you're talking about consistency being your enemy, drawing the stuff you need it. Fran can play 2 Call of the Forest, but you prefer Dana. What is the specific reason or the combo that Dana really makes better for you? It seems like Francesca can play a card, almost any card from the deck at any time if Call of the Forest is in the graveyard. Where does Dana shine?
Well, you
Francesca?
Can't play specials from your graveyard, but yeah. Or you can't play specials from your deck. Yeah, so the reason I like it, one, you have an extra P. Two, you don't have to play Fav. Fav is typically must include in Francesca because you need water. Water is almost always going to be your Francesca target. I don't have to play that in a Dana deck, so I get an extra gold in the deck.
Yeah, that's good.
I just have more flexibility. Also, in round 2, the poison is huge. Poison is really, really good this meta because there's like 3 big decks right now. There's Monsters, Nilfgaard, and SK all have really, really tall cards, like 12 plus. So I can be bleeding. I can open with like a water in round 2. They play some like suboptimal like 4 or 5. I'll play like Malay and kill it. They'll play another card, and then they'll usually play a large tempo swing, like a 12 or something. I can dump double poison in a turn, and I'm up by 30 points. Play 2 more cards and I pass, and I usually get 2 card advantage, and I've thinned my deck with Dana and like Justice, and I have really good top decks. Yeah, the flexibility is really nice. I honestly, it's hard to convince people to play Dana other than you just have to try it and figure it out for yourself, because it's really good. Having the flexibility, like Crushing Trap, for example. Crushing Trap will single-handedly win you against Francesca because Ida got changed, nerfed. Ida's kind of not great at the moment.
Yeah,
And
she's
they
really,
have
really
artifact
safe
removal.
Artifact removal. Yeah, you just pick her anyway because her alternate mode is good.
You just
play
Crushing Trap and you get a 18 on them. And that's 18's pretty good. Yeah, and Francesca's typically prone to bleed. If you don't draw like water or oak, you can just lose the game in round two in an all-in bleed, whereas Dana will never have that issue. I also don't run Oak and Dana because it's too draw-reliant. You don't draw Oak, you lose the game, so just don't play it. It allows you to play more top-end cards. I just... Poison's really, really good right now.
Yeah,
I don't think that's something that people should overlook.
I do like that almost every faction is getting like this crazy super bomb high provision card, like how Heimdall is now in Skellige, Oak was added to Squirtle in Crimson Curse, of course Drog's always been in Northern Realms, these high provision points, high strength cards with really cool effects that are just really expensive to put in your deck, but just feel so good just to slam on the ground. I just think it's really great that it seems like that's something that all factions are able to get. That's like the Timmy play, I guess, if you're talking about the three different card players. That's like the big points, big action, kind of like Tibor, I guess, is Nilfgaard's version of it. Tinboy, you know, they're all in there, right? Tinboy, of course, is not as good, but I don't know.
Don't play Tinboy.
Weird.
Go ahead.
No, sorry, go ahead.
I says I have a question for you. How do you like that? It looks like CDPR is going in this direction where every faction has like a better neutral, right? So Squirtle has Call of the Forest, which is better than World Decree. You have Sigdrifa's Rite, which is better than Renew in like a Svalbard list. Mm-hmm. You have Invocation is better than a Heatwave. Don't really know what Syndicate has. I guess Morales is better than like Ifrit or Regis, I suppose, but that's not really a high-end card. I guess you could say the Boat is better than Roach. Sure.
Yeah, the Boat is better than Roach.
That Northern is Realms is...
the better thing. No, there is one though. I feel like that was the
one. Yeah, Philippa for Syndicate is a better muzzle because it doesn't lock it.
Chat's bailing us out on this one here.
Yeah,
hey, not Arcsight. Tibor, I love Tibor. I just think that it just feels like it's always good. I've never been even against a hyper thin where you trade a Tibor, then you've just bricked through Zarthusius and Yen. I don't know. I love that card so much. And I love, you know, everybody loves Tibor, right? Everybody's had, Tibor has touched your life in some point, right? Either it was Mill, or it was, you know, the sound lines. It was, you know, I feel like I got to remember all the things that Tibor did. You know, he used to like be bad if your opponent passed already, that kind of stuff. Chat knows.
Mm.
You know, speaking of
chat. I like it when they Tibor my villain Shredder. I really like
That would probably be the worst outcome, where in my situation, T-boring Sabrina is like the best outcome, right? That's probably the best one, right? Yeah. T-boy for 13 and get an extra like 10 points when your opponent wasn't ready for it. Anyway, I wanted to say, speaking of the chat, if you have any questions for Green Cricket, Gwent Masters Analyst, or Sir Pumpkin, Squirtle Faction Ambassador, Team Complexity, let us know. We're going to go into a little quick community transition, and we'll take your questions. Just put at McBearded so I see it, but I'll just try to read as much as I can in the meantime. Once again, we are supported by our commandos.
Commandos!
Our commandos at patreon.com/commandershorn. Thanks so much for all your support over this year. It's been a little slower year as far as the podcast is concerned. We are still 119 episodes strong, and we'd be nowhere without you. The same goes to my subs in the chat. And same goes to all of my guests that donate their time to help me make great content. So thank you again to Sir Pumpkin, and thank you again to Green Cricket for joining me on this podcast, this seasonal podcast at the moment. But we have questions coming in from the chat. This is CP Money. Can you please ask Sir Pumpkin why he thinks Dana Poison is tier one in every meta? I think that the wording was very specific here from CP Money.
Yeah, so we've had, I've had a very interesting relationship with Poison for the past couple months. Every couple days I'll say like, oh, Poison's really, really good. And next day it's complete garbage and it's terrible and yeah. Well, it's finally good. We did it, boys. We waited. Willow has made Poison good. So yes, Poison staple in every Scoia deck, at least the Ranger, double Ranger Willow package.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that.
I like that package in Francesca as well, because I don't play hand buff because
nice.
For the aforementioned reasons, you know, you only have Skellen to buff. Sometimes you don't have him in hand. Sometimes you're buffing something that you wanted to know over Guardian Justice, etc. So I do like Weeping Willow for sure. Crawfish124, thoughts on having Challenger at CDPR HQ rather than offsite location? So my response to that is every single Challenger they have done has been very immersive for the fans. They've gone all out on making sure that we had awesome cosplayers, in many cases, obviously, in every case, an awesome location. And this is no different. It's just maybe not as exotic because the opens take place at the CDPR location. But I would trust me, this is not going to feel like an open. I definitely know that CDPR would not have waited this long to have Challenger come back for it to be unimpressive. So I would imagine this feels very different from an open. In fact, so different with a lot of extra accoutrements. Plus, you know, all the people that might be invited as well. You know, that was a big news from CDPR as well. There's going to be Gwent partners and other fans and players that are going to be invited to watch live. And honestly, I mean, if you've been to the studio, which obviously everybody listening, I couldn't say they have been, but there is a really great venue to watch it on, a huge projector in the place where they have lunch every day. So it's actually, if it means that 50 people can come and watch the show and I can meet like a bunch of the community and everybody can kind of interact and have a great time, I don't care where it is. That's my last thought on it. Green Cricket, sorry to interrupt you.
No, sorry, I was interrupting you. I just wanted to add, only because it's at this studio doesn't mean it's like on the open set. Like, they will create something cool for sure. So it doesn't matter where it is. Like, if it's a castle, it's fit for Nilfgaard, right? But like, maybe they want to do something very special for monsters, and maybe that's even best to do it at their location, because that's where they have the total freedom.
Yeah, it's hard to wire up a swamp, you know, to make sure that it's ready for Wi-Fi. So, you know, at least they can make the studio look like a swamp, and that could be something. I mean, they probably, it's possible that they had like a big idea for monsters that they just couldn't make it work. Like, you know, what is monsters? Yeah. Like, what, you know, if it's not another like Wild Hunt castle or something like that, like, what are we really doing here? We just did the, well, we didn't just do, but in the Scoia'tael Challenger, it was the Velichka Mines. I don't want to go back into a cave. So, you know, whatever they do, I'm super excited for it. I think it's going to be awesome. And Pumpkin, did you apply for the invite? Are you interested in going? Is it something that you would be able to, like, actually do? Like, is it realistic?
Yeah, I could go, but then I can't do my own stream casting. Last time I did my own stream casting, it was pretty fun. So I'm looking forward to doing that again.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, when we go, like, it's super fun for the people that go, but it's like very disconnecting if you have like a daily routine of being in touch with the community online, streaming, Discord, and all that stuff. There's a lot to do. But and also, I mean, obviously, for North America, it's brutal in the Americas. Green Cricket, just humor me. If you just had to like guess, ballpark, what would be a trip to Warsaw from where you live on like Ryanair or EasyJet or something in the EU?
For mine, like, it, I think 90 euros back and forth.
90 euros back and forth. Now, I don't even think you need to do the conversion to know that's ridiculous. Like, if I wanted to fly to Calgary, which is like a 4-hour flight for me, it would be like hundreds of dollars, hundreds and hundreds of dollars. Domestic flights are the worst ones. North American flights are the worst ones. Anyway,
I think Dami flew like to Kolomon for the training party, like for 20 euros. So.
Yeah.
What?
Euro travel is just amazing. That's why people go backpacking across Europe, because you can just make your money go so far, even with the euro. You just go all over the place. You just go do your own. That's why I think that the people in Europe that have the option to go to Challenger, just go do it. You don't know how awesome it is to go. I don't know. I wish it was like 90 euros for me to just go to visit any country I wanted to in Europe. That would be amazing.
Can't go anywhere in the U.S. for 20 euros.
Yeah. Not even a train to Montreal is like the, I guess that would be like 40 or 45 Canadian dollars, I guess, or...
I mean, to be fair, flying is cheaper than trains here, so.
Yeah, it's weird. That's weird how it's, I don't know, is the jet fuel made differently? Because it has to fly, I don't, this is a total different rant here. Anyway.
Maybe I should move to Europe. It's cheaper.
I'm completely ignoring some of the questions that were probably coming in through chat. So I am going to just scroll up here. And I'm going to say, question for Sir Pumpkin, did you enjoy Witcher 3? Which is coming out on Switch, by the way. Did you play it recently, Pumpkin? Silence.
Chat's just being chat, and trolling, as usual.
Well, so. Let's just move past the troll and say a question to Cricket here from Artolan Elusive. Are you going back to streaming anytime soon, Cricket? The chat wants to know. Also want to know if there's anything coming up from Team Aretuza like the Thanet Coup, which was a Warsaw tournament that occurred around July, I believe.
So about streaming, like my wife is pregnant and we'll get a little baby girl in 3 weeks.
Congratulations in advance.
Thank you very much. So that's the thing. Like, I have no idea what my timetable is and like how much my little baby girl will occupy me. So I have no idea. And depending on like how I get a regular schedule again, let's see. Until then, it's probably just like sporadic, like YouTube videos here and there. But like, I currently don't have the time, like for anything. It's like really harsh.
Fair enough.
And about the like tournaments, let's see. It's really about like also like how the people win a challenger, like you know. So I can't say anything. Like we have a lot of ideas planned, but there's nothing concrete right now.
You know, I think the future of tournaments and the future of, I mean, I want to know what season 2 is going to look like. I want to know what spectator mode is going to look like. You know, I know there seems to be like a huge push for mobile, and good. I want a lot more people playing Gwent personally. Yes. And I know that mobile is a huge influx of people, especially people, maybe even bringing back people. You know, sometimes, you know, your card game of choice just is, maybe that's your phone game. I don't know. That's just how it is. But, there's a question in the chat here this is Dredge and Dare asking about the Nilfgaardian ambassador. I don't know if this is a troll or not, but I actually talked to Jagras yesterday. We actually were talking with some people in Team Aretuza and preparing for the tournament. So don't you guys worry. There's a lot of people that are dedicated to making sure the Challenger is going to be one of the best competitive Gwent casts ever. Believe me, everybody is involved. We're all there. We're all having a great time. We're talking most days at this point. We're really putting in the work right now to make sure that we see all those lines to victory. We make sure everything's entertaining and we know the matchups. And it's tough because I feel like stuff is still kind of like coming out. I play on ladder. Sometimes there's no Detlaff. Sometimes every other match is Detlaff. So I don't know. Like it's crazy sometimes, like actually preparing. You can only be a master of so many things. You can only, like, I love Croc. I don't know if anybody's going to bring Croc. I don't know if anybody's going to bring Skellige at all. Like it's really out there. I really don't know what to do, but we are definitely trying to make sure that we have as much stuff on lockdown as possible. Yes. Any other questions in the chat here? Question for Sir Pumpkin. Which card ability from Thronebreaker would be great in the live version? I mean, I feel like the answer is all of them because they're busted. But is this another troll from the chat here? Pumpkin's tired of you guys. Pumpkin's sick of it.
All of them. I don't know. I haven't played Thronebreaker.
Oh, is that what this is?
I haven't played yet.
Is your chat giving you a hard time for playing too much Gwent? You wish, all of you, everybody, like anybody, we play Gwent, all right, guys? There are three people on the screen right now that play some fucking Gwent, okay? Don't give anybody here a hard time. You love that we play Gwent all the time, right? You guys love it. We love Gwent, and you love that we love Gwent. Simic 1997 saying, McBeard noticed me as my chat goes fucking bonkers. Any predictions about new expansion, new factions needed, or are we fine at 6? This is probably the most interesting question because this is like a really logistic question. If they were going to add a new expansion, it becomes harder and harder over time unless you release it with a full like standard rotations worth full of cards so it doesn't have less cards than a faction at any given era, I suppose. But you would think that if they really, really wanted there to be seven factions in the game, that it would be sooner rather than later. At the same time, I don't want the next expansion to be just another faction expansion, personally. What do you think, Green Cricket?
I mean, the funny thing is, like, if you look at it, I think there's no which added another faction, so to say, or like, let's say Hero and Hearthstone, Color and Magic after release, except Gwent.
Gwent's the only one that I could think of,
Yeah, exactly. So that's already like a very bold faction. And as you said, because it's a logistical problem. And like we saw it a bit, I think, with the Syndicate expansion, like if you have already colors, heroes, or factions, and you just release a patch or an expansion with a new faction, you need to send the other faction some love. And this faction just like was so overwhelming that like people just played Syndicate and like the other factions like didn't get as much play. So I think if you just have like faction expansions, and the same thing will probably happen over and over again. So I would like personally, I think rather like expansions like Crimson Curse are really cool because like you can discover something new in every faction. And as you said as well, like if you want to have a new faction, then we should probably do it right now before the like mobile or with mobile, so to say, so that the new players that come into Gwent already have this base set of heroes, factions, colors, and then we build onto that instead of like adding more and more
leader abilities, not leaders or heroes.
Oh, my bad, of course.
You know, that's one thing we didn't really talk about. So I mean, this is a weird one. This will be my question, as if I am in the chat. My question, I'll throw this to Pumpkin here. Just generally, do you care about the leader abilities versus leader decoupling? Do you care about that identity sort of?
Yeah, it's really going to hurt my lore, love for the game.
We'll just watch Chad blow.
No, honestly, I don't think it matters whatsoever. I think if people want to stick to their lore, they can stick to the lore, but it means that they get to play actual like leaders that see no play. For example, Unseen Elder. Let's say you spent $40 and bought that Unseen Elder skin. Yeah. You can't play it. It's unplayable.
Until they buff it, right? And you don't want to hang on that, right? You don't want to be like, maybe they'll buff Elder.
Sure. I mean, like, I want to play Eldaine. He's kind of a cool looking model. I can't play him because he's terrible. Or maybe that'll change next patch, but it means that like you can have cosmetics or you can play leaders that you actually want to play. So I think it's a good thing. It's a good thing for CDPR too. It's going to make it easier for them to make 3D models without having to like make a new ability for all six factions, which is going to be harder for balancing. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to touch on the, should they introduce like a new faction versus expansion? I really hope CDPR does not make a new faction anytime soon. I think it's a terrible idea. I would say the Syndicate expansion probably did not go as well as they had initially expected it to. I would argue that this last patch had a bigger expansion or had a bigger impact on the game than the Novigrad expansion, just because Novigrad expansion, each faction got three new cards.
Yeah.
This last patch, I mean, I'll just take Skoytel, for example. I have way more than three cards that are now playable. The reworks took unplayable cards and put them into playability, which is really nice. They need to flesh out some archetypes like Spy Nilfgaard. I'm really hoping Spy Nilfgaard gets some love this patch or this expansion. So I really hope CDPR does not introduce any new factions anytime soon. I do think Syndicate was necessary if they did want to, right? You do want to make a new faction earlier than later, just because later it's kind of hard because you're going to have to introduce more cards when you release that faction. So if they really want to introduce a new faction, I think they have to do it alongside with an expansion, like an additional 100 cards. So I don't think they can only do like one faction and then like a couple cards here. It doesn't bring anything new to the table for the other factions, and that's kind of underwhelming for people who do play those factions, especially because a lot of people do only play maybe one or two factions. So let's say you only play Northern Realms and Monsters. This new faction got...
Who does this? Like, who plays only one faction? Like,
lots of people. Lots and lots and lots and lots of people. Both of us that see chat, we know. Yeah. No, there's
most
a lot of people that are
play
like
every faction.
Super dedicated. I mean, you've all seen Reddit. Like, everybody has a comment that's like, as a X main, I have to say, yada, yada, yada. Like, there are people that really just kind of wait for their very specific opinion to be heard. And good on them. Honestly, it's nice to have mastery. It's nice to feel like you're an expert at something. Like, it's hard sometimes, especially being a streamer or a content creator. Like, I would play the same deck every day if I wanted to be like, if I really wanted to like be like a master at something, but I very rarely get to be a master at anything because I'm usually switching it up every 10 games. So there's that issue, but I think that just in general, I think that specialization is awesome. I think that the way the leader decoupling is going to go, if it means that I can play as Dandelion and say observe a master in action, I think that it's pretty cool in general, but I do like from a casting point of view, I do like being able to like talk about the leader like it's that leader's army. I think because it's an army, having a commander is sort of like that aspect that I think I'm going to miss. But you know, it's just all up here. It's all up here. Fundamentally, I mean, you know, I could play a couple of games on mobile and not really think about it. I just think it's going to be weird to be like, oh, here comes Svavlad, as opposed to saying, you know, he's activating Ursine Ritual. But that could just be because it's a change thing and we're all human beings and sometimes change is hard, especially even in a game that changes constantly. This is another big kind of POV change. Nothing actually changes fundamentally, which is...
Yeah, and about the lore perspective, I mean, like there are some extremes like Eredin spawning Archers. That's okay. Well, that's a bit traumatic. But to be honest, if you look at Squirtle, if Francesca has the Eldaine ability... Or lore-wise, it's still fine, right? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and like you said, in Crimson Curse, we saw a lot of neutral cards. Like, there were more neutral cards than there were faction cards for the reason that if you put more neutral cards into a set, you, even if you play only Northern Realms, you'd be able to build more decks because there'd be more neutral cards than there would be faction-specific cards. So if you wanted to make a new deck, you'd have more options. I think that that's important. I think that every expansion should have something to offer for everybody. And I think that if they were going to introduce the idea of dual faction cards, while I'm not crazy of only one faction kind of owning that, I think that the future of that, just like how I feel like the future, how Portal sort of made me hopeful that there could be some sort of new provision-based tutoring that could be controlled in a way that could make these really cool cards, because I feel like Portal is just a very, very cool card. Now with 4P being like the new go-to for like how you're going to like stack that bottom part of your deck, where you're going to get your value up top, how you're going to save money in a way, Portal becomes like always a consideration when you're building that. Like if you want to put Portal in, it really changes the way you build like that area of the deck that's supposed to get you value at the top end. I just think it's even more interesting now than it's ever been. And I always wanted that card to be interesting ever since they released it. I thought Tritums might be the only thing that works with that, because at the time it was the only engine at 4. There's very few options. Even Dukal Guard was 3. And even then I thought Nilfgaard had an option, but it's actually really cool right now. But at this point, I'm just rambling on as we go deeper into the podcast. I'm going to ask one more question from the chat, and that will probably be the wrap-up here. I'm just scrolling. By the way, shout out to everybody who hung out in the chat and stuck around for the whole podcast. I love you guys so much. And thanks so much for the huge host, Pumpkin. I know a lot of your people are in the chat as well. So it seems like, I guess, the only question that I can seem to find in my scrolling is just kind of talking about mobile. But, I mean, it's obvious, right? We all want to play Gwent on our phones so we can just play more, right? I mean, it just seems like that's an obvious answer.
How many people are going to buy an iPhone to play Mobile Gwent?
That's a good question. I mean, the phone wars are very much alive when it comes to software development. iPhone usually gets picked first just because it's easier to develop for the iPhone. The iPhones are usually like, it's an iPhone or it isn't. I'm holding mine up because I'm ready to play Gwent. Like, it's just, that's it. iOS is the iOS. They don't have to worry about all these different versions and different programs. So if you're ever wondering, like, why iPhone first? That's just the way it is.
It's just easier.
So, I mean, you guys are like a mega lulling the iPhone. That's a perk. I mean, there's obviously advantages to Android, but a good perk is that games come out first. Hearthstone also came out first for iPhone as well. I don't know how many. Can anybody reference the amount of time in between iPhone and Android release for Hearthstone? Because maybe we could kind of project when it could be. Was it 4 or less? 4 months or less? I don't know. Oh, the H word. Oh, sorry, guys. Oh,
the
man.
The H word.
You can't. Chat's a fun time for the live shows, by the way. If you guys follow at Commander's Horn, follow at McBeard if you want to be involved in the live shows. If you're listening to this on the feed, I said the H word. Sorry, guys. But yeah, I mean, mobile is just going to be... what do you think would be the biggest... Here's a more broad question. This will be the last question for you guys. What do you think would be the biggest benefit of having another large influx of players? So you have, let's say Gwent's user base goes up by 50%. This is obviously a huge projection. And, you know, you got all these people climbing in from rank 25. Reddit explodes. Hey, I'm new to the game. What's up? What's up? What's going on? Your chat explodes. Your YouTube comments explode. Hey, I just got into this game. What's going on? What do you think would be the best way to navigate that if we wanted more people to play Gwent? Green Cricket, I'm going to hit you first with that one.
What do you mean with navigate exactly?
Like, would it affect the way you present your content? Would it affect the way you present articles on Team Aretuza? Would it affect the way you, the way you become community facing, knowing that there is, you know, a percentage, a slice of the pie, yeah. 50 is obviously very optimistic, but, you know, a slice of the pie that are either coming back to the game, so they might as well be new players because stuff changes so much, or they're new to the game. They didn't know that Gwent was even standalone title. They saw it on the iTunes store, the Witcher fans, that kind of thing. Like, would it affect the way you approach the game? Would it affect the way you approach kind of content creation? And like, how would you welcome these new players? It's kind of a really open
question. Definitely. Like, I mean, this brings so much more energy into the Gwent community, which is like, I kind of feel like you see the same faces all day. You kind of know each other, right? Like, and if there's so many new people in there, that gives you so much more motivation and so much more energy to actually also produce more content for them again. So I would probably, like, because currently, for example, I'm doing a lot in Team Aretuza, but if there are a lot of new people in the game, I would have so much more motivation to do something for them because it's not a one-way street, right? You get a lot back when you do something for them. So I think it would be just very cool to experience that feeling again, like, just, like, help them and, like, you know, grow the scene again. It's like, I don't know, it's really cool.
Yeah, so, new players are a great thing for the game. But I got a shout out to Raishakas being here in the chat. That's Raishak, one of the developers from Gwent. Roasting Pumpkin here is saying that if new players are coming back into the game, he would have to start adding creator to his stream title. What a throwback. You know, I can't even remember what was added or what that meta was, but Spellatel came out. There was the Gold Immune, Villain Tretton Mirth, Shiru, Scorch, Weather, the beginnings of uninteractive decks. Sir Pumpkin was there at the frontier. What do you think about that throwback, Pumpkin?
So, like, people got so pissed over, like, the whole creator thing and apparently people in, like, PTR or whatever had built this deck, but nobody had said anything about it. And so, like, it's like several months later, I got these angry complaints in Discord that people were mad that I put the word creator in the title because I was unaware that this deck was played at some previous time, but the public had no idea. I don't know. Whatever.
Oh, it was a really new deck at the time.
I don't know.
No, it was super new at the time. So you could have been like, it was realistic to think that in the first 3 days, like the thing, like, I don't know, man, I thought it was hilarious. Do work, man. Get your shit out there. You're still out there, right? Like, it's huge. Yeah, I mean, I think
it's... put the deck guide up. That's how I started my stream. That's, like, I built that deck. It got 80,000 views on GwentDB, and that's the reason why I started streaming, because of that deck.
Lots of people, like, look at, like, LB Dutch Boy. He was in one of the Gwent Opens. He's an awesome player. One of the coolest people that I got to meet in any of the Opens. He got into the Open, and he was streaming shortly after that, and you get momentum from that. Like, people know who you are. They know your name. You know, like, say what you will about Gwent, but these Gwent challengers, they're always going to probably pull 5 digits, even at the low end. Like, there's a lot of people that get to know your name when you get on screen for a large event, and CD Projekt Red is the streaming... you know, that's the channel you're on. Like, that's, you're just going to get known. So I think a lot of people that make use of that momentum it's really smart. You know, it's hard. Like, you know, we at the challenger can't get hosted immediately after the challenger. So, you know, we have to, like, you know, get home 2 days later, sleep it off. But, you know, it's awesome for the people that can make it work. Right. I think that's good, man. This is a great stream. We rocked a solid hour and a half for the people out there who want, you know, the weekly Gwent podcast, which is maybe once every 4 weeks these days. But what I can promise the chat, everybody who's listening right now on the feed, Gwent Challenger is the return to the pro scene. You guys know that I always get stuff done when I'm out there chatting with, you know, the casters, chatting with the players, and it looks like there's going to be lots of people to chat with at this event. Numerous people, you guys saw the tweet, play Gwent. People are getting invited. If they can make, I mean, I don't really know that. I mean, I'm going, so I don't know like what you get out of this. Like the when you make a case, how do they get you there? I don't know what's going on, but there's going to be people there. There's going to be a large community event. It's going to be a lot of Team Aretusa people there as well. I know that as well. Green Cricket, you're going to be in good company. So, you know, we're going to get a chance to talk to lots of people. So you can expect a good amount of Commander Sworn content from this Return to Glory for the pro season. That's the title of the podcast right here, Return to Glory. Because whatever you got to say about Gwent, you can't say that we're not back into the pro scene. We're really excited. It's just, you know, I'm leaving in 6 days at this point. It feels crazy. I don't even feel like I'm ready. Oh man, it's going to be so much going on. Like I play a lot of Gwent, but I never feel like I'm ready because these guys are so smart when they play. Like they're just they'll shut down an argument so fast. It's funny. I was watching. This is actually just a quick tangent, Pumpkin. I was in your chat, and you guys were talking about Lacerate at one point, and the idea of like if there was an idea of like being a reverse Commander's Horn. And I was going to type this into the chat. I'm like, would a reverse Commander's Horn be a player who is a great host interviewing two players that are worse than him, whereas the current Commander's Horn, this podcast, is me just hoping to learn anything and glean as much knowledge as I can from my guests. So I just want to say thank you so much to Green Cricket, and thanks so much for Sir Pumpkin to coming on the podcast, sharing your time, and making some great content for me. And looking forward to seeing you, Green Cricket, in person at Challenger. And Pumpkin, it's always a pleasure. I love that you like coming on the podcast. And it's because of you, I think it was... I think it was the first time I had you on, it was just you and me. And then the second time I had you on, and it was three people. And you're like, oh man, three people is so much better. I think after that, yeah. I've never had a one-on-one because I just assumed that you were saying what maybe other people weren't saying. Because it's just nice to have a conversation between three people.
Agreed.
Green Cricket, you're getting ready for Challenger, but you do make content for Team Aretusa, and you're out there doing your research and all sorts of stuff on Twitter. You can see it on the screen. Where can people find you when you're making Gwent content?
When I'm making Gwent content, you go to YouTube, you enter Green Gwent, and that's where I am. Basically.
One more time, you cut out. I want to make sure that everybody gets that. Say it again.
You know, new internet, I'm working on it. It's like, go to YouTube, enter like Green Cricket Gwent, and that's where you'll find it for sure. If you just enter Green Cricket, you may end up on, I think, a polo, like sports team or something. I don't know. Like, try it out. It's like, it's interesting.
Time for a rebranding.
Yeah. And of course, on Twitter and on teamaretusa.com, to like articles, the Juice Academy, and so on.
And Green Cricket _ on Twitter as well. Pumpkin, yes. Most of the chat here, no stranger to you, but of course, anybody listening on the feed. When do you stream? Where can people find you on Twitch, YouTube, and other?
They can find me on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, at just Sir Pumpkin, no I in Pumpkin. And I stream daily, every day but Sunday, sleeping, and let the salt flow out. Yeah.
Desalinate. Yeah. Just sleep it off. I want to give a shout out to Artolan Elusive, who's been spamming saying, I want to thank you and your guests and all the guys from Gwent community. You're awesome people and a great community. Best I've ever met at any game. It has been a pleasure to be part of the Gwent community. You know, there's a lot of players have been here from the very beginning. And I think it's a testament that this game is has always got legs and it's got developers that really care. And also to NXSD saying, McBearded, do you expect the devs to tell us anything about Masters Season 2? I do expect that. I'm hoping to hear some of that myself at Challenger 5, and I'm expecting the information to be coming very soon after the tournament, because after that, it's a big question mark. Want to give a huge thanks to Green Cricket and also by extension Team Aretusa, as they're helping... a lot of the casters prepare for challengers, so thanks so much to Green Cricket.
I think the shout out should go to Mo'Legion at this point because
Mo'Legion, Demorcus as well. Everybody who's chatting with us, making us really think about what people might be bringing, the matchups we might be looking forward to. And thanks again to Sir Pumpkin, not just for his time and for the great conversation, but for the huge host. A lot of people got a chance to see the podcast today. And that's it for me, at McBeardCH. Follow me on Twitter. You can follow at Commander's Horn as well. All podcast-related stuff goes there, but I always retweet it anyway. You can follow me, twitch.tv/McBearded. I am streaming most days, especially until the beginning of Challenger at 11 a.m. Eastern time. And from after Challenger, I guess we'll see. But I'm leaving on Tuesday, the 10th, 11th? The evening of that day, but I'm streaming every day until then. We got a fight night coming up on Friday. If you're in the chat, you can challenge me. I'll make a bunch of new brews. Every new game will be a new matchup. Try your meme decks. I'll try my meme decks. It's always a good time. And that'll be it. Thanks very much to you all, my friends. Thanks to the chat. This is McBearded for Sir Pumpkin and Green Cricket. Best of luck on the path.